Andrew Solomon is with us. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is with me, of course. I was just astonished that you were able to give me 400, give or take, pages about depression, and it wasn't depressing. How'd you do that?
I think my underlying message is really one of hope. I started off from the interesting revelation that some people have fairly minor depression and are nonetheless completely disabled by it, while other people who have got very terrible depression are actually able to lead rich and meaningful lives in and around the depression, painful and agonizing that the depression itself may be. And I wanted to try to understand what it is that allows people to have rich and full lives in the face of depression. A lot of self-help books on subjects like depression try to talk about typical people, and I saw two problems with that strategy, one of which is that there are no typical people, and the other is that they're very boring. And I decided...
The books are instead, the
people! I decided instead that I wanted to try to write about extraordinary people. Some of them are extraordinary people who are very educated, some of them are very uneducated, some of them are rich, some of them are poor, some of them are here, some of them are abroad, some of them are alive, some of them are out of history. But still, I wanted to try to come up with all of the extraordinary tales about the ways there were to derive meaning from a life in which there was depression.
I felt I was reading a novel.
Thank you.
I kept picking it back up. Well, I really should go to bed now. It's late. Well, just another 10 pages. The aliveness of the
subject. A page turner on depression is not predictable.
It's remarkable.
But thank you.
But there's something, you know, you talk about people looking for a cure, or there being a cure for depression, and by the time you're through, a cure for depression looks a lot like a cure for life. And the question, of course, is do we want to be cured from life?
Or from depression.
Or from depression.
Depression obviously comes in various strengths, and I don't think any of us want to be cured from sadness or to have lives in which there's only so-called positive emotion. Serious depression is a terrible, useless, non-constructive, painful state, and if we can save people from it, then I think we certainly should. There's a lot of discomfort around with the idea that we're looking at changing who we naturally are, and people have an obsession with a kind of natural self. But, you know, our natural self without intervention would lose all of its teeth by the time it was 30. And our natural self is not necessarily so wonderful. We make all kinds of improvements to our natural self in the course of our ordinary lives. And we make all kinds
of
mental improvements. Yes, and getting an education and all kinds of other things that really change very fundamentally who we are. And I think depression is one of those terrible things that it's just as well to get away from. But I think it's important in getting away from depression that we not get away from the broadness and profundity of a human emotional range.
Part of what is, I think, so interesting, and probably why so many people have, I'm curious, but to me at least, one of the reasons that people have been so interested in this is you enrich the notion of self. The disease itself, or the condition that is depression, manifests itself so distinctly in each person. And each person, as you report the stories you tell, are having to confront a not this monolithic self that we seem to think is who we really are at core, but all the different types of selves there are, even from moment to moment.
Mm.
And in this case, to do it in the face of serious challenges, which...
There is a strange illusion, which is contrary to anyone's authentic experience, that we are consistent in ourselves. And mental illness of any kind is particularly disruptive of that misapprehension. I was very struck in listening to the arguments around the Andrea Yates case by how people said, well, 15 minutes after she drowned her children, she was calling the police in a rational, calm tone of voice, so she must have been okay and known the difference between right and wrong when she put her children in the bathtub. And I thought, well, in the first place, 15 minutes is a long time. And in the second place, how you act and how you feel are frequently inconsistent. And in the third place, you can have two contradictory pieces of knowledge in your mind at the same time. Part of what goes on when you're depressed is that you, for example, lie in bed thinking, I'm too frightened to get up and go to the bathroom. And thinking at the same time in your mind, this is ridiculous. Everyone gets up and goes to the bathroom. I mean, what on earth is there to be afraid of? You have a sort of strange knowledge that you're ill and that the illness is a very bizarre one, and yet at the same time you're in the grip of it. And I think that that inconsistency, that strange doubleness of experience, is something people haven't talked about as much as might be productive.
I was struck in that vein there was a sense that you had brought to life what I've heard characterized as the postmodern, that one has a number of identities, it's all context dependent, the times in which we live are transitional, and here in a state that can be debilitating or not, as beyond a certain point, it's you don't have any choices, but how you cope with this major fact in one's life changes, and it, in some ways it just absolutely described the postmodern.
I had never thought of it in those terms, but I think you're absolutely right that part of what I'm writing about is there not being the kind of clarity and certainty that characterizes aesthetics and philosophy up through the modern,
and
there
then,
being...
Excuse me.
No.
And then you add to that that you are very clear in two or three different places that one of the places that depression just spikes is in transitional societies, when things are very much in question, when social structures are changing, when the rules are changing. And again, that describes the modern condition.
Well, lots of people have said to me, oh, I'll bet there are much lower rates of depression in so-called primitive societies where people are in tune with nature. And I've said, actually, the rates of depression there are about the same as the rates of depression in very modern, very advanced societies. The place where the rates of depression spiral out of control are societies, for example, that are turning from the rural to the industrial, or they're going through any other major transition like that, because people don't know what their role is in those societies, and they suffer a disorientation and a feeling of displacement, which frequently can trigger depression.
Trigger depression. It's the change that brings on a mental condition?
I think everyone has some degree of vulnerability to depression. If you have a very low degree of vulnerability, you have to have a very extreme circumstance to make you depressed. Once you've been depressed, you may get depressed the next time much more easily. But initially, to get started, if you have a low level of vulnerability, you need a big event. If you have a very high level of vulnerability, then a very small event will trigger your depression, and you'll become depressed probably very easily and quite possibly much earlier in life.
And in either case, it's going to be cyclical.
In either case, it's going to be cyclical, it's going to be recurring, and as it continues to recur, it's going to have less and less to do with external circumstance. But in either instance, there will be a triggering circumstance at the beginning, and one of the things that certainly can be a triggering circumstance is the sense that you have no identity because your society is changing so rapidly that you don't know who you are or what you're doing in it.
Which sounds like the postmodern piece. You distinguish between a constructivist and a dimensional, I think those are your words, perspective on depression itself, but also I think that it generalizes to lots of different things. And it took a while for me to figure out categorical and dimensional.
Yes,
I'm sorry. What you were talking about, because it
I have
to give you credit. You writing a book like this and not lapsing into jargon must be just an incredibly demanding task. And you didn't. This was an alien idea. It was not jargon. But can you sort of flesh out what that the dimensional aspect is and what the categorical aspect is?
The idea really is that some people say depression is just a more extreme version of ordinary emotions that we all have. And other people say depression is an illness and completely different from anything that you feel or experience when you're in the normal emotional range. And I said that I thought it was both, that I deeply believe that it's both. That on the one hand, you start off from the kinds of feelings of despair and withdrawal that all of us experience in ordinary life. On the other hand, they become so exaggerated and so extreme that they become experientially completely different from those emotions experienced in normal contexts. So when you've got a major depression, it's not that you're having emotions which by type or even in their sort of physiological way they occur in your brain are things no one else has ever known, but you're having them in a way that is so exaggerated as to be completely agonizing and painful to an extent that can't be imagined, I think, by people who haven't been there.
Part of this, the patriots of whom you spoke earlier, the advocates for various perspectives, seems to go to that categorical question. There are people who insist that this is a it's something you can control. That talk therapy, you can work your way through it, or you can understand something about your childhood. There are people that will argue that it's purely chemical, and because we have chemicals, we can treat it and live happily ever after. And of course, by your representation, there are more or less infinite variations on those kinds of categories. Is that part of the challenge of trying to understand what depression is?
You know, it becomes a political issue. There are a lot of people who would like to see better benefits, for example, for people who suffer from depression. If you can say that depression is a chemical imbalance in the brain, and you can show a brain scan that says, look, he's got lowered metabolism in the right prefrontal cortex, then it's easy to come up with a clinical model and to get health insurance to cover it and to get people to be more sympathetic to it. And people are nicer about an illness whose immediate causes and precipitants and whose immediate manifestations can be described in clear, sharp scientific terms.
I think you call that the microbial approach. There's an agent, it causes this, you do that, and it's gone.
Exactly. Whereas in fact, I think that a tendency toward depression is very much braided into many, many other qualities of personality. And while I think people who have got severe depression are having a set of symptoms that constitute a real illness, they certainly should have insurance coverage, they certainly should have full sympathy. People who are severely depressed are not simply being weak-willed and are not simply morally degenerate people. All of that being said, I think there's been a tendency to talk about depression as purely chemical and to suggest that it's a sort of aberrant chemistry that would otherwise never occur in the brain because it makes people feel better.
Andrew Solomon is our guest, and we're going to continue this conversation in just a moment. This is The Paula Gordon Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.